Welcome back, everyone, to the Gender Fluency audio recordings. I'm Jose Domingo Cruz, and in the summer of 2017, I talked with Robert Long about fluency, gender, and working as instructors in Japanese university English classes. The topic for this conversation is the dynamics of male-female conversations and how to improve them.
Good morning, Jose.
Good morning, sir.
So today we're going to talk about the dynamics of male-female conversations.
And, okay.
Basically, what are some important aspects of these kinds of discussions, and then how can they actually be improved? Because as you know, shyness is a big Japanese trait. So it's often thought, it's often that a lot of teachers don't focus on gender discussions. They focus on discussions. They don't think about how males and females interact.
And maybe in a rough way.
In a rough way, yeah.
You know, they don't really consider that that's important enough to consider as part of their teaching strategy.
Right.
They just say, well, that girl is shy. Well, that boy is shy.
Well, I mean, in terms of social linguistics, it's one of the larger problems, I think, because we have, in Japan at least, a huge depopulation rate. And a lot of that is because the women and the men do not want to interact with the opposite sex. And without these interactions, there's no relationships, and there are no marriages, and then there are no future children. And so this has a big problem. This causes a big problem with industries that are related to children, or elementary schools and nursery schools, and just keeping the pension system going.
Well, yeah, I was about to say it's not even just the nursery schools. We're talking about a depopulation of the country that goes straight to its economic base and its entire existence.
Right. I mean, rural towns in many parts of Honshu are actually disappearing.
Right. They can't get doctors.
Right.
They can't get teachers to come. People are leaving those rural towns, literally not because they don't like rural settings. It's just nobody lives there anymore.
Right.
They can't make a living.
So in a way, that this topic is actually quite important. And from looking at the Japanese university student corpus that I did, which had about 60-odd conversations.
And that's the one on the website, right?
Right.
Right.
We found that women are often very passive when meeting boys for the very first time.
Mm.
And keep in mind, this could be a cultural trait. But then these women are not your usual passive women. They're very smart engineering students. Some of them are quite social, outgoing with their own gender.
Right.
And especially in their first language.
Right.
But when meeting men for the first time, they seem to slip into a very passive pattern of letting the male take the lead in the discussions.
I think we should make it very specific, though, that we're talking about second language settings.
Right.
So this isn't them at their best in their first language.
Mm.
And this is not only just a second language. This isn't just French or Spanish. This is English, about which especially this country has a great, I don't want to say a phobia, but it has a lot of anxious baggage associated with studying and using English.
Well, it'd be interesting to look at how the interactions would have differed in the first language.
That's right, yeah.
And then, I mean, if the women were more active and more outgoing in the first language, then we would recognize this as just being a second language problem.
Right.
But that in itself is still a problem, because if the women go abroad and work, then they're slipping into this passive.
That's right. That's right. Exactly. Exactly.
Role. So, one of the things that I was surprised when I looked at the transcripts, because it's something, if you look at the video, you wouldn't normally think about. But once you start looking at the actual transcripts, you begin to see a pattern of a lack of questions and definitely a lack of opinions that the women failed to ask. So the issue of passivity is actually quite a particular vexing one for teachers like ourselves.
Sure.
Because how do you get students to be simply more active?
Oh.
I mean, telling them is not going to cut the mustard.
Yeah, that's right. Talk.
Talk. Yeah, talk more.
I think every English language teacher in Japan has had that moment where, like, just out of frustration, they just look at their student and just look at them blankly and say, talk!
Right.
Or they've wanted to. I know I have both. I've actually just said that, and then the student responds, but that's never effective. You know, you want them to be motivated, self-motivated.
I'm beginning to realize that the art of conversation is really becoming lost. I mean, students mm-hmm. really are not having these very serious interactions, mm-hmm. Deep discussions about mm-hmm. Any kind of topics, and it's yep. very, very superficial, and they really don't have opinions.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then questions, maybe they don't have so much interest.
Right.
Because they haven't really reflected on the topics at hand.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, in terms of educators, how do you approach this particular problem?
Oh, it's a huge problem. And we're not just talking about grammar and prepositions or things like that. Now, we're talking about, number one, understanding the psyche of these particular students.
Mm.
The social setting that they're in. This is Japan, where silence is far more golden than it is in America. We talk so much in North America that we had to come up with a way to gently prod people to talk less. Which is, I don't agree with that shibboleth. You know, silence is golden, but we had to come up with a way to get people to quietly quiet down.
Mm.
In this country, you don't have that problem, so you have to understand all of that as an instructor. You have to understand that particular classroom. You have to understand what these kids have been told about education. So there's the entire culture of education that is unique to this country, or every country has its own education culture. You have to know all of that before you can even begin the discussion, or else you're working from the wrong assumptions, which I find a lot of teachers who just arrive in Japan, and we still have a lot of those teachers just arriving in Japan, even if they've read books about the country or have read papers about research on Japan, don't really understand until they get there. Me, it took me maybe about at least 5 years to really understand it. And it led me to a great revelation, is that even as a language instructor at university, I actually teach in the native language. And that's an entire discussion in itself. But there are so many problems that have to be addressed that you have to sort of go case by case. So you ask yourself, what do you want to achieve? What's your goal for this particular exercise or for this particular class or for this? What's the tactic that you want to achieve for that particular outcome has to be addressed piece by piece. It in my experience, and this is, again, just my experience, it's hard to create an overarching theory. You just have to come up with individual hypotheses for each moment or each target, and then approach that. And then maybe a personal theory comes out for you out of all of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's not only just getting opinions, but having students tell stories or to contradict mm-hmm. or oppose. Mm-hmm.
See, those are different techniques, right? They would require different techniques. Getting kids to tell stories is a different set of exercises. Getting to give opinions. I think everyone knows that those are really important things to address. But then, just to give an example, native Japanese teachers and the native English teachers alike fall into the really easy trap of saying, okay, well, we're going to have speeches. And so what do? They make them write their speeches, they rehearse their speeches, they memorize their speeches, they give their speeches. And what is that? That's just more of what they did in junior high school and high school. Mm. They rehearsed stuff, memorized it until they were sick of it, and then they just regurgitated their memorized material.
Right.
Totally useless in a conversation.
Right. So in terms of the big picture, I mean, we have the issue of production, fluency, grammar, grammatical accuracy. Do you think these should be taught at the same time, or do you think they should be taught in stages?
If grammar is your thing, then you should teach grammar. If speaking is your thing, then you should be ready to accept the fact you're going to have to sacrifice some of the grammar because what you're trying to achieve is better speaking rates.
Mm.
And I think that's where people get a little caught up. They think this is a speaking class, and then they can't get rid of that itch at the back of their head when they hear grammatical mistakes.
Right.
Now, there's nothing wrong with approaching it at the same time, but you have to be able to tell yourself, that's not what I really want to teach, so that's a secondary or tertiary priority.
Hmm.
Teach it a little bit, but don't make it the main goal. Be ready to sacrifice those little things so that you can say to these kids, you've made progress in this, and that was the main goal of the class, and so I congratulate you. Here's your A. However, at the end of the class, your grammar still sucks. Keep that in mind for the next opportunity that you have to study English.
Mm. Well, so that's the thing I walked away with when I was looking at this transcript again,
because
it's a big problem for Japan, and it's a big problem because a lot of school boards and schools themselves don't want to actually have the girls in, they have same-sex classes.
That's right, and you still have all boys' schools, and you still have all girls' schools, just that parochial kind of thinking. That's just a symptom of it. I mean, it's actually improved in the last little while. You don't have as many of these all boys and girls schools because they know where the money is, and there aren't enough boys to keep populating their all boys schools, so they decided to become co-op.
Okay.
But that just, if they had their druthers, a lot of these people still would have just all boys schools because they say, well, that just helps the boys concentrate.
Right.
And And so I don't want to go there because that's a long, boring conversation, and it's really obvious what should be done. But that's what you're dealing with in terms of educational culture in this country.
Well, I think Japanese got to realize that conversations are important. Conversations are life. Because without the conversations, we don't have the relationships. And we don't have the relationships, then we don't have anything.
But getting to, because I think that's what you want to talk about more, right, is what should we do in the classroom. I think you got to make it clear to yourself what you're teaching. So if you're trying to teach, let's say, for example, you still get a lot of teachers that need to teach presentation. You have to think about yourself, what makes a good presentation? And ask yourself, what is the best presentation you've ever seen? And a lot of teachers will say TED, TED, TED Talks, that TED. And he said, that was a really great presentation. Okay, what made that presentation great? And how closely can you bring your students to it? And then ask yourself, what was the worst presentation you've ever seen? And a lot of people will actually say, yeah, it was a presentation where someone did a lot of PowerPoint slides and it was really boring and they were just regurgitating a memorized speech. Okay, so there you've got your ideal, and then you've got your opposite of the ideal. You've got to strike something in between and tell the students themselves, this is what you don't want to do, not just what you do do. And then ask yourself, in your teaching, what are you doing to actually promote the good stuff and de-promote the bad stuff? Or are you in a situation where you're actually promoting the bad stuff, where you're saying, okay, now let's study PowerPoint and let's make PowerPoint slides? Or are you using PowerPoint to teach? That's a passive way to tell the students that PowerPoint is good. Are you using PowerPoint to teach? I still see a lot of teachers, they use PowerPoint in their classroom. They just talk into the mic, and then they take their PowerPoint slides, print them out, and pass out their PowerPoint slides to the students. What does that tell the students? I don't have to listen to the teacher because I'm going to get everything on these sheets, and that's why they end up talking in the back or sleeping in the back. You got to... If you're going to go after this whole problem, you've got to be ready to reassess everything that not only other teachers do, but you do, that actually compounds the problem, because we've got a big problem here. And reassessing everything that we do, I think that's a lot of soul searching has to be done here.
Sure. Okay. Well, thank you, Jose.
Oh, you're quite welcome, sir.